Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. If this Brahmana really is Lord Vishnu, who is worshipped by the Vedic hymns, he would never give up his widespread reputation. Either he would lie down having been killed by me, or he would kill me in a fight. Purport. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda ki jai. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. Shishi Gornitai ki. Purport. Bali Maharaj's statement that Vishnu would lie down having been killed is not the direct meaning, for Vishnu cannot be killed by anyone. Lord Vishnu can kill everyone. Thank God he doesn't. But he cannot be killed. Thus the real meaning of the words lie down is that Lord Vishnu would reside within the core of Bali Maharaj's heart. Lord Vishnu is defeated by a devotee through devotional service. Otherwise, no one can defeat Lord Vishnu. Om Agyana Timinandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurur Shri Yukta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahaganath Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Paritjana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahaganath Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhevacha Patita Nam Pamnibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Shadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Kripa Mayaprabhu was giving an amazing class at the weekend. Was everybody here for that wonderful class? Yeah, most of us were. One thing that really struck me about that particular class was that Kripa Mayaprabhu was emphasizing the fact that we're actually Gaura Bhaktas first. First and foremost, our first and foremost relationship in terms of going back to the spiritual world is actually through Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishna and Radha are definitely there, and they are there in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna, Nahyanya. As we know, we're Sadhana Siddha Bhaktas, but we are also Kripa Siddha Bhaktas, correct? Yeah? We need some mercy, right? Who doesn't need mercy? Anyone? I forgot to warn you again, it's going to be an interactive class, potentially. We'll see how it goes. We all need mercy. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a Kripa Sindhu. He is the ocean of mercy. So naturally, it would make sense that if we want to get mercy in order to perfect our lives, we need to go to where you get mercy from, correct? Makes logical sense, right? You don't turn up to a dentist's office and ask him to look at your teeth, do you? No, it's fine. There's an interesting thing about giving Bhagavatam class for anybody who's been here is the microphone stand sits right in front of your notes, so it's a little bit awkward. I'm trying out a few new things here, so maybe I'll move it just here. That's better. Right, you wouldn't go to a dentist or a doctor's office in order to have your teeth checked, would you? Many of us are probably good friends with Krishna Kirtan Prabhu. He is a dentist by trade. For those of you who don't know, his name was Bhakta Kushal a long time ago. And he says that he does get some very funny requests as a dentist. He does get people ask him for all sorts of different advice and things like that. So We need to go to where the mercy is at. And this is also an important point because as followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the preceptor of our movement. I was discussing actually with a couple of senior Vaishnavas when I was in Vrindavan last time that in one sense, our philosophy is very unique. It is rooted in the traditions of the Vedas, but it's actually only as old as the movement that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu started. Because unlike all of the other Vaishnava branches, we have this very direct understanding of the relationship between God being a devotee and also being God at the same time. This is a very unique thing. We're going to explore this a little bit in the class. I thought this was quite an amazing point because really in one sense, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu virtually synthesized all other strands of philosophy that existed before him and turned it into a package that is actually very easy for us to access if we are basically, you know, the denizens of Kali Yuga, as we all are. We were all born in Kali Yuga, and I'm sure some of you were probably very exalted people in your previous lives. I definitely wasn't, as evidenced by the fact of, you know, I mean, birth and so many other things. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he intentionally synthesized the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy in order to be accessible and in order to be an ocean of mercy. I'm talking about this because in this particular verse here, Bali Maharaj actually foreshadows the coming of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says he would never give up his widespread reputation. But this is actually what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He was a renunciant. In fact, one of the words that's used is desires to give up, which I'm not totally sure, but you're doing your Gayatri Mantra. No? Oh, okay. Is that not related in Sanskrit? I was trying to do a bit of a search to see how it was related to some of the words vairagi and renunciation and so on. I think it's jasati? Jahasati? Anyway. It's like killing. Anyway. Let's move on. We're not Sanskrit scholars, thankfully. I'm really glad we don't have to be Sanskrit scholars to go back home, back to Godhead, as evidenced by my pronunciation. So anyway, the point is that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we all know that Krishna has his six opulences, and one of his opulences is renunciation. But it's actually this Leela as Gaura Leela, where he emphasizes that that opulence of renunciation the most. And this is actually, in one sense, where the mercy is at. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to all become sannyasis at all. What does renunciation actually mean in the context of our Krishna consciousness? It's not an external endeavor. Krishna consciousness isn't about what color of cloth you're wearing. What does renunciation actually mean? We have to give up the desire to what? Sense enjoyment's there, but what sense enjoyment indicative of? The desire to? Yes, lord it over, to control. Ishwaraham aham bhogi sidoham balavan sukhi. I'm God, I run the show. And you know what? I'm just not going to do my tax return because I can't be bothered, you know? So Lord Chaitanya is showing us, see, he is, and all of the members of Gaura Leela exhibit sadhaka rupas. What it is to be the external, they exhibit, I'm tripping over my words here. You get a bit nervous up here. All of the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Gaura Leela are all showing us how to be devotees. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself takes on the role of a devotee. Now, ostensibly for us, this means to show us how to render devotional service. But in a deeper sense, actually, Lord Chaitanya's renunciation, especially in his sannyas leela, is representative of that kind of renunciation that the gopis went through when they gave up their family attachments to go and be with Krishna during the ras leela. Krishna said to the gopis, he said, Naparya, I don't remember the rest of the story, he says, Naparya ham, he says, I can never repay you. So I can never be able to truly understand what it is about me that made you give up all of the stability in your lives, all of your familial attachments, all of those things that most people strive for and put great efforts into just to come and be with me, just to come and spend one night with me in the Shraddh season in a forest, not exactly the Ritz, is it, in a forest in the middle of a rural India, you know, to dance with me. Just one night. They gave up everything for one night. One shot at the big time, so to speak. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, So Krishna himself, he spent a lot of time querying this. There are many books written by our Vaishnava Acharyas that go into exactly how Krishna cognized through this whole process. But he realized, like most people, that you really can't understand something unless you experience it. There is no substitute for experience, right? It's just like you can't learn to drive by reading the road code alone, can you? No, you'd be a pretty useless driver. I'm a useless driver, I don't have a license. But anyway, the example still stands. So Krishna decided that he was going to exhibit himself as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was going to manifest that mood of the gopis. And throughout Gauralila, there are actually many examples where there's a direct correspondence to incidents in Krishna's leelas in terms of what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does. So when Lord Chaitanya gives up his family, he, like the gopis, he's in ecstasy of Krishna because that's his primary focus. But he also goes through the anxiety as well. There are many chapters in the Chaitanya Bhagavat before Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas where it illustrates some of the anxiety that he goes through. It wasn't exactly an easy decision to decide to give up his whole family. Just like I'm sure for the gopis when they were sitting in their rooms in Vrindavan, they were sort of sitting there going, well, you know, I mean, I really, really do want to go and spend time with Krishna. He's the love of my life, but also at the same time, I've got this. We've all been like that, haven't we? We've all had those moments. Maybe some of the men who have joined the Brahmachari Ashram have had those moments where they've been like, well, you know, I could go out and have a family. I could do this, or, you know, I also could be a Brahmachari. Or maybe you've had it when you've decided to, what are other decisions that devotees go through that are big ones? Can anybody give me some, what are decisions that the ladies, let's hear it from the ladies, because normally we go for the men, because there's more of them. Huh? Attachment. Yeah, should I give it up or not? You know, is it okay? Can I justify it against the philosophy? Is chocolate really that bad? What does my GBC man say? Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It does, yeah. Should I chuck in the wife and kids or the husband and kids? Can my husband survive without me? Who knows these days? So the point is we have these moments where we have to decide. So Lord Chaitanya, like that, he went through two Chaitanya Bhagavat, where he goes through this particular process, where he looks at his surroundings and he analyzes very much what is it that I will achieve by renouncing, and how will it actually help me to experience the inner mellows of devotional service. Lord Chaitanya's Mahaprabhu's mood is... No, let's not get onto that. So anyway, Lord Chaitanya decided that he was going to... that he was going to exhibit this mood of... this opulence of renunciation. And interestingly enough, when we look at Chaitanya Leela, when Lord Chaitanya's his experiences of devotional service deepen, when they actually become very... apparent that he is deeply ensconced internally within the mellows of devotional service happen after his taking of sannyas. Yes, there are many incidences of his exhibiting different bhavs before he takes sannyas. And one Vaishnav theologian, he likened it a little bit to that of, because Lord Chaitanya is playing a devotee, he likened that to actually Chia Bhav, or the shadow of, is it Chia Bhav or is it Abhav? Above? Yeah, the shadow of Bhav. He likens it actually that Lord Chaitanya's youthful leela is very much like the process of a devotee naturally coming to Krishna consciousness. If we actually look at it, you know, he has a job. He has a wonderful childhood. He's raised in a very traditional family in the traditional culture. Then he comes to a particular point in his early teens when, like a lot of people, he starts kind of looking at the world and going, "Hey, maybe there's a little bit more to life than this." I'm sure we've all had moments like that, especially if you're from the West. It's almost a rite of passage that as soon as you hit sort of 13, 14, you stop listening to your parents and you start doing your own thing, isn't it? You know, to great success or alarming failure. So Lord Chaitanya does the same thing. And indeed, even when he goes on pilgrimage to Gaya, which I suppose you could liken to the medieval Bengal version of a road trip. You know, we've all seen the road trip movies, you know, those classic coming-of-age tales. Well, Lord Chaitanya goes to Gaya, and he meets his spiritual master. And it's then that he's initiated into the process of worshipping Krishna. He then starts to experience much enthusiasm, and he even decides, you know what, I'm just going to leave it all, and I'm going to go off to Vrindavan. We've all had those moments when we first join, well, many of us, at least the vast majority of us, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we think, you know what, forget my career, forget everything, I'm going to throw it in, and I'm just going to go off and worship God. Yeah? But then a voice from the sky tells him, no, hang on, wait a second, you're getting a little bit ahead of yourself here. You do have some duties. Maybe you should go out and just, you know, give it a bit of time, give yourself some time to think things over, and then go from there. So Lord Chaitanya then goes back to Bengal. He then preaches Krishna consciousness as a Grihastha devotee. And this is representative of his moving through the stages in many ways. As I said, it's a loose definition, if you will, moving through the stages of devotional service until finally he comes to the point of Nishtha. And at the point of Nishtha, he's sitting there thinking, well, I could continue to preach Krishna consciousness as a Grihastha, or I could decide to give everything up. And like any intelligent preacher, what he did is he looked at what was going to be best for preaching. And he decided that for him at that particular time, for him to practice his Krishna consciousness and then share it with other people was to then renounce. And then as Sutapa Prabhu was giving class a couple of weeks ago, he explained that when Lord Chaitanya goes off to Jagannath Puri after he's taken sannyas, this is like his Madhyam stage. This is when he's preaching much more. Obviously, we know that Madhyams are proper preachers. Kanishthas can also preach, but they also practice as well. And this is why we also see in Lord Chaitanya's Leela, he spends one whole year in deep bhajan with his Vaishnava associates. This is in one sense representative of the Kanishtha devotee going through the stage of just wanting to insulate himself in the devotee community and practice Krishna consciousness in such a way that he becomes strong in Krishna consciousness. And then when he has something, his natural desire is to then want to go out and teach it to other people. But the interesting thing about Lord Chaitanya's sannyas lila is it very vividly exhibits the fact that God doesn't want to be God and he doesn't want to control other people. And because he has inherited the mood of Srimati Radharani and therefore also the servants of Srimati Radharani, who we all know are manjaris in the spiritual world, he exhibits that in many unique ways. And the particular way that I want to focus on at this particular point is the fact that Lord Chaitanya, even though that he is the leader of the Sankirtan movement, he's actually leading from behind. See, manjaris are very unique. They are gopis who get all of the benefits of being in Madhurya Ras, but they get none of the credit. Seems bizarre, doesn't it? You get all of the, it's like saying you have all of the responsibility, but you have none of the power. I was in a situation like that where I was employed, and it was a very difficult situation. And there was a constant kind of an anxiety having all of the responsibility, but absolutely no power, and nobody was listening to me, and so many other things. But actually, this is what is unique about our philosophy. Has anybody noticed that our philosophy tends to have a lot of, what would you call them? Dichotomies, if you will. Can somebody give me a dichotomy in spiritual life? Or something that seems apparently contradictory. It is the highest in this sense, but it is exhibited this way, or vice versa. Anybody? Get married or stay. Okay, not quite what I was thinking, but that's definitely. That's a good point. In one sense, we exonerate, you know, renunciation and so many things. But at the same time, we have one of our most prominent Vaishnavacharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, saying that actually, you know, it's better to be renounced and be married. And then you go, well, how does that work? Another example, if I could just sort of throw it out, is that in our philosophy, it's an awkward thing, it's a bit controversial, but, you know, let's just throw it out there. In the material world, being a lady is unfortunately given a pretty bad rep, right? Isn't it? And yet, it's the highest thing that you can be in the spiritual world. How does that work? Anyone ever thought about that? Seems a bit strange, doesn't it? I mean, obviously, if one's an enlightened Vaishnava, then we're not giving ladies a bad rep in the material world at all. You know, we see everybody as a servant of Krishna. But it's kind of strange, isn't it? Has anybody got any else? Other ones? Nanda Prabhu?
No,
Yes, that is a very good point. That was a debate in the locker room in the Brahmachari Ashram 2 nights ago. Krishna is within everything, but he's not at the same time. It seems a bit strange. Gurudas Prabhu? Yeah, definitely. There are definitely some strange points. So, it is a strange thing that to be the highest thing, or to exhibit the highest mood of compassion to everyone, is actually to be kind of invisible, really. You know, there's one example that a good friend of mine from Soho Street, he mentored me a lot when I first started practicing Krishna consciousness. His wife was teaching me Bhagavad Gita, and they spent a year living in Australia, working just to be closer to their spiritual master. And they were helping out a lot at the local preaching center. And at the preaching center, they had Gaura Nittai deities there. And there was one devotee who, his habit was to always be there. He had one day a week where he would always come and he would always dress Gaura Nittai. And he was a very methodical devotee. He lived outside, you know, but it was the high point of his week. He obviously very much loved worshipping this particular set of Gaura Nittai deities. And he'd always come in early and make sure that everything was there. And, you know, he was very methodical. And many devotees would say that when he was doing the dressing, he was very absorbed. He was, you know, focusing. And, you know, to the point where sometimes he'd even talk to them, like, oh, do you want to wear this? Or things like that. So many things like that. But it was always the tradition in that particular temple. The devotee who dressed would always be able to offer the 7 o'clock arti to the deities. But he would always leave about 2 minutes to seven. He'd just go off and disappear. And nobody would be able to find him. You know, he'd just leave. And I can't remember her name. Anyway, Gaurakishore Prabhu's wife, she asked him one day, finally. She found him out the back of the kitchen peeling potatoes that particular day. And she said to him, she said, why is it that you always leave? And he said, well, to be perfectly honest, I just like to dress Gaura Nittai. I'm just happy to dress them behind the curtains. I like to offer arti to my deities at home, but I don't feel comfortable doing it. I'd much rather somebody else have that opportunity. I don't want to be in the public eye so much. We could say so many things, you know. I remember when I first heard this, I sort of thought, are you kidding? You know, I mean, that's a bit, that's a bit like, oh, Prabhu, I'm really humble, you know, oh, you know, don't glorify me, you know, please glorify me, but don't glorify me, the same kind of thing, you know. Sometimes we see devotees sort of go through that whole kind of thing. But she was saying that she genuinely felt it was a genuine thing, that he had actually had this realization that it was much more enjoyable in spiritual life to give other people opportunities and to try and bring the best out for other people. See, that's the whole mood of a manjari. A manjari spends all her time organizing the spiritual world so that everything is wonderful for Radha and Krishna and all of the primary gopis who enjoy it with Krishna. And then when everything's going on, she's not even there. During Rasa Lila, she's not even allowed in even in the Rasa study. She's going off, she's hiding in the bushes somewhere. Again, we're, you know, hiding in the bushes. I think it's kind of amusing. The highest thing in the spiritual world is not opulence. It's to be, you know, a farmer in rural India. Again, another dichotomy in spiritual life. So this is the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And throughout his whole Leela, we see so many examples of where he consciously tried to bring the best out in others. Even in the process of taking sannyas, he tried to bring the best out in others. He came to Keshava Bharati, who by all accounts externally was a Mayavadi. But he came to him and he said, you're the only one who is qualified to give me Krishna. He says, I don't have Krishna. I need you to give me Krishna. There's a section in the Chaitanya Bhagavat where he convinces Keshava Bharati Maharaj. And he's glorifying him. And by the end of it, Keshava Bharati Maharaj isn't saying, you know, oh, yes, I am. He says, yes, I'll do this because you've asked me so nicely. Because I see that you actually have Krishna. But in that, he brought out the best in Keshava Bharati. He comes to Chandrasekhar Acharya, who's a Grihastha devotee, he's a Brahmana, and he says, you are the only person who is qualified to do my yajna, to do the initiation yajna for me. He gives him direct service. Even the hairdresser, somebody who by all accounts was a Sudra or a lower caste, he's given the opportunity to do the highest thing. This is Audarya Bhav. This is something I really think that we need to think about as devotees. especially when we're preaching and communicating, first and foremost, I think, amongst ourselves and other people. See, if you want to get the mercy, you go to where you get the mercy. The mercy is with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the mercy is by trying to follow in his footsteps. I was given by a friend of mine, a very good friend, he gave me a book in the Christian tradition that's called The Imitation of Christ. It's a very popular book. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Shishi Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Shishi Gorintai Ki. This book is called The Imitation of Christ. It was a very popular book amongst Catholics and Protestants in the Middle Ages, or the 1500s. Now, our process isn't to imitate, but you can understand what they're trying to get at by a title like that. It's to follow in the footsteps. We say follow in the footsteps. We say don't imitate God. If you try and imitate God, probably something bad's going to happen. Like you'll get, 998 of your arms chopped off or something like that, wasn't it? There's that Leela. If you try and be God, you get your arms chopped off. That's one lesson from the Bhagavatam. We don't try and imitate God, but we try and follow in his footsteps. So Lord Chaitanya's mood of Audarya is to be compassionate to others, is to be compassionate to devotees and the innocent alike. Virtually everybody in the material world, other than those really hardline atheists, and that doesn't include Richard Dawkins because he's not really an atheist. he's a straw man atheist. And I hope I don't get done by the class coordinator for bringing up something like that. is to be compassionate to other people, is to try and find a way of bringing out their good qualities and helping them get closer to Krishna. Lord Chaitanya, when he went on his pilgrimage around South India, he made a point to meet Ramananda Roy. And through that whole dialogue with Ramananda Roy, he brings out the best of all things. He brings out the highest understanding. Actually, he brings out our whole philosophy, virtually, from A to B, in a very short conversation. And all Lord Chaitanya keeps doing is saying, my Bengali is not about as bad as my Sanskrit, but I'll give it a shot. Eho haya agya kaha ara. That is nice, but please tell me something more. He's not even telling Ramananda Roy what he wants to hear. He's just asking him. He is just making a concerted effort to try and draw out the best in him. And you know what Lord Chaitanya says at the end of the conversation, after Ramananda Roy has gone through the highest tattva, the whole understanding of the Madhurya Ras? Does anybody know? Does anybody know what Lord Chaitanya says to Ramananda Roy after they've gone through the whole philosophy? He says, wow, thank you so much for sharing that with me. And Ramananda Roy is sitting there going, well, hang on, no, wait a second. I'm just saying what you've asked me to say. But of course, Lord Chaitanya is not interested in that. He was only interested in getting the best out of Ramananda Roy. This inspires Ramananda Roy so much that he devotes the rest of his life, and especially in Chaitanya Leela, to living with the Lord and practicing the same principles. There are so many examples throughout Chaitanya Leela where we see devotees trying to bring out the best in other people. This is because it pleases Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, one of its founding principles, sometimes we say there are three founding principles, and one of them is Jiva Doya. That's mercy to the Jivas. That also means devotees too as well. Devotees are Jivas as well. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, my devotees derive great satisfaction and pleasure from always enlightening one another and discussing about me. So if we really want to create a nice, wonderful community where people can practice Krishna consciousness, we need to put serious thought into the fact of where do we go to get the mercy? The mercy comes in one way, in a very serious way, from trying to draw out the best in other devotees. Now, this isn't done in an artificial kind of way. It requires a great amount of thought and thinking. But I use the example of, I was on the mentorship retreat last year with Sachinanda Maharaj, and he was talking about principles of spiritual mentorship. Whether you like it or not, in one way, you are actually a spiritual mentor. You may not intentionally do it, but just the way you carry yourself influences other people. It influences other devotees, and it influences the outside world when we have interactions with them. How we carry ourselves as people is a testament to the kind of people we are aspiring to be. In management principles, they call this alignment, where you line your core principles with your behavior. And it can take a lot of time. But this is actually part of the process of sadhana bhakti. We aspire for many great and wonderful principles, very lofty ideals, but we have to harmonize our behavior with that. Now that can take time, and as I've often said in many classes or when I'm discussing with other devotees, sometimes you do have to cut yourself a bit of a break. You're human, after all. But at the same time, if the intent isn't there, if the desire isn't there to get the mercy, so to speak, we have this very in-house lingo, I'm going to get the mercy. What does that mean? Let's unpack it. Well, here's one way of unpacking it, is to try and tax our brains to find ways of bringing the best out of other people, to bringing the best out of devotees, and to inspire them in Krishna consciousness. Satyananda Maharaj was relating a very vivid example when the Pandavasena went on retreat to Abhantoya, and he happened to be there at the time. And he went on a walk with one of the younger Pandavasena boys who was going through some relationship difficulties. It was quite amusing how Satyananda Maharaj sort of explained it. And the first thing that came out of his mouth to this young man was, well, I'm a monk and I have been for pretty much most of my adult life. What can I tell you possibly about a relationship with anyone? Which I thought was a very honest appraisal. It's funny that the biggest relationship counselors in ISKCON happen to be monks. It's kind of weird. Have you ever thought about that? Go to someone who knows. Anyway, so Satyananda Maharaj was trying to counsel this boy as best as he could, but this boy kept coming to the point where he was saying, you're just not listening to me. I'm sure the parents out there have probably, you know, there's nothing like the teenager going, but dad, or but mom, you're just not listening to me. I'm sure there is probably some validity there. And Satyananda Maharaj also considered it for a few moments, and he thought, hang on, maybe I'm not listening to this person enough. So he sat down and he listened. And anyway, he was pulling some interesting, he said, wow, and the things that came out, you know, a teenage boy going through relationship angst, all of the, you know, weird and wonderful things that the mind goes through. But what he started to realize, and what was later confirmed to him when he spent some time with a very good friend of him who happens to be a Christian minister, who wrote a wonderful book on these very principles, was that when we're dealing with other devotees, especially practitioners, or when we're just dealing with anybody in general, the best thing that we can do is to listen, and is to help them come to the understanding themselves. And sometimes as devotees we say, you know, share with me your realizations, you know. Yes, I can tell you what my realizations are, but is it really going to mean anything to you? Is it going to change your life? You know, honestly, do I have the bhakti shakti to be able to inculcate devotional service in your heart? Really, as a practicing devotee, you know, can I commit that hubris and say, yes, I can give you one of my realizations and help you to understand that, yes, you're not the body, Prabhu. You're not the body, Mataji. You know? No, I probably can't, right? But I can help you to come to those conclusions necessary. I can sit down with you, give you proper time, and draw out the best in you, can't I? Yeah. But it does require a little bit of thought. It means that we have to stop being the controller. See, when we sit down and we discuss philosophy, a lot of the times it can be, speaking from personal experience, there's a tendency to sort of, sometimes the one-upmanship sort of gets in there, you know, somebody puts forward a philosophical point and then you go, ah, yes, but this acharya says this. And then, oh, yes, but, you know, and then the next thing you know, we've gone higher and higher and higher and higher. And where has it left us? You know, we've had a wonderful conversation, but are we any more inspired in Krishna consciousness? No, we're probably just sort of sitting there plotting how we can nail this guy the next time using some Sanskrit verbal roots, or, hey, maybe I should go off to Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj's Gurukul and study some Nyaya, and then I can really do this guy. Nyaya being logic and argument. No, I personally think, and I don't know what you think. What do you think? Do you think it would be much more inspiring if when we sat down with devotees, the mood was actually that we want to try and inspire this other person? And that it would be, rather than I'm going to inspire you, it's I'm going to help you become inspired. Krishna says, my devotee who preaches this message to my devotees is the most wonderful. Well, you know, Krishna doesn't say that for no reason at all. Yes, in one sense, everybody in the material world is actually a devotee of Krishna. They just don't know it yet. But also amongst the devotee community, we need to come up with ways where we can actually start interacting with each other like this. Wouldn't it be wonderful? I remember having a conversation with one devotee and he was saying, you know, in all my time in Krishna consciousness, I've never had anybody sit down with me and ask me how I can become inspired in Krishna consciousness. I've never had, you know, this devotee has been practicing for like 15 years. Wouldn't it be amazing if that was a commonplace thing? If we conducted ourselves in such a way, if we actually invested in training, in, what would you call it, in our own personal endeavor to try and find ways of inspiring other people to become happy individuals in Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada said, chant Hare Krishna and be happy. He said, you have to chant, but he said, and be happy. You know, so maybe until we're satisfied completely with the chanting of Hare Krishna, maybe we need to invest some time in these things. Of course, it's very easy for me to say this sitting here on the Vyasasan. When you're a preacher preaching Krishna consciousness, you can make wonderful high statements about how things should be. But I like to be much more practical. And my encouragement to any of you is if any of the points that I raised in this class inspire you at all, go away and think about them. Spend some serious time. Maybe if you're like me, I'm a writer, so I like to sit down with a pad and paper. I buy these cheap pads from, you know, like Tesco's or whatever, and you know, just things that come into my head, I sit down and I jot. And actually, giving ourselves time to chew these things over means that we start to assimilate things more. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he says, when you hear this philosophy, if you go away and you think about it, you are worshipping me with your mind. See, you are actually investing in your relationship with Krishna. You're investing in another way of pleasing Krishna and getting the mercy by thinking about how you can bring the best out in other people. You don't have to be an amazing sannyasi or guru to bring the best out in other people. Krishna is not looking for you necessarily to go off and start a temple in another country. What he's looking for you to do, is to see if you understand or are willing to try. It's not even do, it's to try and imbibe that mood that he has. And he's come as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to renounce being the controller and to try and bring the best out of other people. Because if you want to bring the best out of other people, you have to shelve your ego. And I can tell you, in my personal experience, there is nothing more satisfying in Krishna consciousness than having a devotee come to you. Maybe they came to you in a bit of anxiety. Maybe they didn't even. Actually, yesterday I was having a wonderful conversation at the Watford office with Ananta Purushottam Prabhu and Radha Mohan Prabhu. We were all there, and I just threw out, I said, well, you know, we need to come up with this educational program to try and share Krishna consciousness with particularly Western or the indigenous people of England. Or the, you know, I guess when you say Western people, you include the non, anyway, definitions later, because I'm non-indigenous. And we ended up having an amazing conversation that it went from, you know, how can we communicate better, to just how can we conduct ourselves as devotees when we're interacting with the general public. There is nothing more dissatisfying for somebody who comes to Krishna consciousness, and I'm saying this because I was one of those people at one point, when a devotee comes to you and gives you the philosophy. Nothing turns you off more. I thought the Hare Krishnas were absolutely mad. Sorry, there's a Kiwi term that I can't repeat that came into my head. We're absolutely... potty, to use the old English term. They were off their head, as a Mancunian friend of mine used to say. Because they just had this tendency to just talk philosophy at me. Oh, you're not the body, you're this, and, you know, the whole material world suffering. And I'm sort of standing there going, well, I have bad days like everyone else, but I mean, I thought I was a pessimist, but man, you've really taken the cake on that one. It was egg-free cake, by the way. So... if we can actually think about conducting ourselves in such ways where we try and bring the best out in other people. Now, that may be, for instance, if we go out to preach to somebody else, that we don't necessarily give them the whole gamut of our philosophy. We just help them to just like spirituality a bit more. Not everybody is necessarily going to become a shaved-headed, or not shaved-headed if you're a lady, although some of the ladies in ISKCON do shave their head, especially if you go to ISKCON London. Sorry, Soho Street. or not, you know, chant 16 rounds and follow all four regulative principles. But if they start to like Krishna, that's an amazing thing. Their spiritual life has started. Prabhupada said this. He said, if somebody just likes Krishna, that person's spiritual life has started. You know, Prabhupada was very strict, but at the same time, he was also very liberal. His whole mood, the same thing as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was to bring the best out of other people. It was always, who are you, what have you got, and how can we bring the best out of it? Bring the best out of you. So just going back to my point, because there's 1 minute left in class, and I'm sure everybody wants to go off to breakfast, and I don't want to take any more of your time, but if you have enjoyed, or have you have agreed with any of these particular points, go away and think about it. Spend some time. You may find that you come to, like I have oftentimes, is, I like that point, but I don't know how I'd go about doing it. Now that's also a very important and powerful thing too, because it means that you're conscientious enough to realize that, and we do this a lot in ISKCON, that just because you're enthusiastic about something doesn't necessarily mean you know what you're doing. But that doesn't matter, because you can go away and learn. And by that process of going away and learning about how to do these things, means you assimilate things much more. Means that Krishna will give you the understanding by which you can come to him and help bring other people to him. Wouldn't it be amazing if you all went away and maybe a few of you had a conversation and you decided, you know what, we really like this idea. Maybe we can actually invest in it. Maybe we can come up with different ways that we can do it. Or maybe we can go find other people who are doing these things. We can look at different ways. Wouldn't it be really amazing for the GBC, your GBC man, or woman, there are lady GBCs, your GBC man or woman, if you came to them and you said, hey, you know what, we've got this idea for pastoral care amongst devotees, or we've got this idea for preaching, this is what we've gone through, I think your GBC man would probably be quite relieved, wouldn't he, or your temple president. He hasn't had to tax his brain in how to do it. See, we should be motivated, we should try and be inspired, but we should also make sure that we do things properly. Because Lord Chaitanya wasn't willy-nilly about things. Everything was very organized. He organized all of his Harinam parties. Sometimes people say, you know, when we go out, we do look a little bit sort of odd. You know, you've got somebody wearing a pair of jeans, or you've got somebody wearing, you know, and everybody's kind of a little bit mismatched. But in Lord Chaitanya's lila, everybody was, you know, in nice rows, nicely dancing, etc. You know, there were leaders for the dancing, etc. Because that was where their particular area of talents lay. So like this, when we're trying to improve our quality of life as devotees, especially in a communal environment, because we are a community of devotees, whether you live in the ashram or not, we all know that Vaishnava Sangha, spending time with the devotees, is how we advance in Krishna consciousness. So if we want to improve our lifestyle in amongst the devotee community, you know, we need to give it proper thought and proper planning. And we may not always have the expertise, but just asking questions like, where can I go to? And where, who do I go to, and where to look, can help bring that wonderful, wonderful environment that much closer into being. So I'm going to stop here and open it out for any questions or comments.